Her mind rifled through the items in the bedroom for something that could be used as a weapon. A man's voice.
You stupid bitch.
Her eyes widened in the darkness, a loud rush of blood pulsating in her ears. Her stomach clenched. Oh God, someone was in there. She heard a dull thud and a groan of pain. What the hell was going on? She crept along to the door. The floor gave a loud creak and she froze. The noise in the living room stopped dead.
I'm going to kill you, she heard a man yell.
Oh God, Lomax has sent someone to kill me. She moved towards the window in a panic but stopped when she heard a woman's feeble cry.
Please don't. Help me. Help me.
Kira hurried back to the door and put her ear against it. What was going on in there? Who was out there? There was a loud crash and a bang on the other side. The tremors rumbled through her skull. She jumped away, stumbling back onto the floor, unable to suppress a cry as she fell.
I'm sorry, I'm sorry, she heard the woman crying. Please don't do this.
Kira pulled herself up, flung open the door, and holding up her comset like a weapon, shouted,
I've dialed the police. They'll be here any minute.
But the light from her comset illuminated an empty living room. She moved the light around, doubting her eyes, then threw all the doors open, flicked on every switch in the flat, and checked the front door was locked. Finally, she leaned back against the wall and slid to the floor, her legs weak with adrenaline. Had she had some kind of waking dream? Was it another phantom, more vivid than ever before? These residual memories were getting stronger and were beginning to threaten her mental balance. Whatever was happening, Kira knew that she had to find the killer fast, or she was going to lose her mind altogether. Chapter 24. Monday, 5th of February, 2035. 9:45 a.m. The memory of the stranger's T-shirt had come back to Kira during the vivid reliving of Lomax's memories that had haunted her when she finally managed to sleep. Again, she had been late into the hub and had to wait until she could get Tom on his own, when the discussions were over and the team had moved on to their tasks. He was walking towards the door as she approached him.
The man I saw, the one in Lomax's memory, I remember now. He was wearing a T-shirt with a medical logo on it, she said quietly.
She brushed her fringe aside, self-conscious under Tom's scrutiny. He indicated she should follow him.
Doesn't Andrew Harper, Isabel's boyfriend, work at the hospital? She asked as they made their way up the stairs towards his office.
Yes, that's where she met him, ambulance driver. We interviewed him yesterday morning.
What did you make of him? She asked.
Isabel's friends say he's a control freak. He said they'd had a row about moving in together. He seemed harmless enough. She followed him into his office. The mitzvah necklace Isabel was wearing tells us who took her.
And biotesting?
None of his DNA on Kaylee, only Lomax's. He sat at his desk, but Kira remained standing. It occurred to Kira that an ambulance was the ideal way of transporting a body. She opened her mouth, but at the same moment, Tom called up an image of Harper on the screen, taken from his interview. Is this the man you saw in Lomax's memory? Andrew Harper had auburn hair, a strong jawline, and dark eyes. He was distinctive-looking, almost handsome, but he didn't resemble the man at the scrambles. Then again, his face had been covered with blood.
I don't think so. How tall is he?
183 centimetres.
No, it's not the man I saw. He was only 170, 173 at most. Any luck trying to find Martin Coombs?
Are you going to sit? He indicated the chair. She shook her head.
No luck yet. We have CCTV images of him visiting Lomax back in the day.
His eyes travelled up to the screens. Martin Coombs, he said aloud. Immediately a number of images appeared, showing the young man from various angles. Does this look like the man? Kira studied the face.
He looked the right height, same sort of build as the man Lomax had hit.
That could be him, you know. I mean, I'm not sure. It was dark, but...
She switched her attention back to Tom.
It's very possible.
We haven't found Coombs yet. After his last known residence, back in 2021, it became confusing as to where he moved next. His neighbours seemed to think he had moved out of London altogether. He's been estranged from his parents for years. It's possible, if this is Lomax's accomplice, then he might have gone underground and be keeping a low profile. He might even be hiding with Isabel. We're working on it.
We're running out of time, Tom, Kira urged. Head injury man is nowhere to be seen, and we can't find the only visitor Lomax has had who might fit the bill.
You think I don't know this? His jaw tensed.
I'm so sorry I couldn't have done more in the transference. Found more.
You tried, he said, but didn't look at her. She looked down to the hub. The women on the murder board called to her. Names, places, dates, their eyes staring at her, pleading for justice. A single witness. She took a deep breath.
Let's go back to Ray Clark. He's the only witness we have. I know he had problems, but don't you think we should at least try to find him?
Come on, Kira. Ray's memory was messed up 15 years ago. It's not exactly going to be any clearer now, is it?
We might be able to find something he didn't remember, she insisted. I mean, we've never tried to read the mind of someone affected by alcohol. But we could give it a go.
Tom sighed and rubbed his forehead. Not much of a bloody witness, is he? A mashed-up memory of something he thought he saw, but then he says he can't remember where he saw it.
How many days have we got until the next woman dies? Two? We know the killer's pattern. We need to do whatever we can. I think if the Mitzpah murderer has ever made a mistake, it would have been early on. Before he evolved into what he is now, an efficient, wily predator skilled at cleaning up after himself. He won't always have been like that. It's worth going back and having a look. We could see things that he didn't remember, key pieces of information.
Kira was clutching at straws. She didn't even know if Ray was still alive. He hadn't been in great shape after the last time they'd seen him, and that had been some time ago. Even his son, Marcus, hadn't been certain of Ray's whereabouts after that disastrous interview. Marcus had been furious about the way the police had treated his father and put in an official complaint. I don't want you putting too much pressure on yourself. You look exhausted after the Lomax trip. I think this is too much for you. You need to take it easy now. But Tom's tone wasn't one of empathy.
I slept badly last night.
She sounded almost insulted.
Ray Clark could be the key to the whole case, Tom, don't you see? He's the only witness that we have any chance of getting anywhere with.
Jimmy said no more, Kira.
It's not Jimmy's decision, she almost yelled. It's my kit.
He pursed his lips and looked at her for a moment too long. I think Ray Clark told us everything he could at the time. God knows, with the state he was in, that was useless. Imagine what he would be like now. Seriously. Why don't you pull out the old footage of the interview and see if we missed anything? Transfer the file to your own computer. I'll tell the desk sergeant you have my permission. Take it home. Look over it in your own time. Was he getting rid of her? Getting her out of the way? There's no point in trying to find Ray Clark, Tom insisted. But Kira had already decided. 10:36 a.m. Isabel. The light hurts her eyes. Whatever he injected her with is starting to wear off. She feels as though she's lying on a shoreline, waves occasionally washing over her as a tide of fear comes in. Her brain anticipates a moment coming soon in which she will suddenly remember how afraid she is, and terror will hold her veins taut like the strings of a puppet. You're a good girl. She can see his mouth moving beneath the semi-opaque plastic, but the moulded curves shroud his real features. I know you're a good girl. You tried to help that man, It was a test. Man? Her voice is croaky. Test, she says in a haze. Yes, the man on the ground outside the pub. Things start to come back to her slowly. Ruby, her mouth wide and red as she laughed a little too hard at a joke Liv had made. What had that been? A heaviness comes down on her brain. She wants to sleep again. He prods her hard on her cheek. Her eyes spring open. Her breathing is laboured. Remember. She does remember. She can see him now in her mind's eye. A young man lying face down on the pavement, right next to the brick wall of the pub, one leg bent, one arm outstretched, his dark hair matted with blood. You see, I knew you were a good girl when I saw you were at the hospital. Kindness, compassion. Who are you? She begins to say, but the words melt in her mouth. She can't focus her eyes. Her arms are underneath the sheet, beneath a buckled strap. She wriggles her fingers and toes, trying to bring back some feeling. The fog is starting to lift slightly from her brain. She can see a smile behind the mask, but she doesn't understand. Her survival instinct tries to decipher it. He reaches out a hand and strokes her hair. He smells of lemon and soap. I was so right about my choice, Isabel. How do you know my name? She can feel tears pricking her eyes. I've been following you. She tries to get her mind to focus, thinking back to normal life, back to home, her dad, the hospital, walking around the shops, going to visit her friends. A chasm of grief and longing opens up, and she feels as though she is falling. I picked you because you care about people. You know how to look after them. You have a good heart. I saw you with that man outside the pub. You didn't have to help him, but you did. Was he okay? Isabel has seen drugs used on patients many times. She knows that drugs can make you sleepy or talkative. She knows drugs can make you feel no pain, or drugs can kill you. Maybe if she didn't have drugs in her system now, she would scream and scream. Instead, she feels as though she is having a chat with someone on a park bench on a sunny day. Did you leave him there? She asked. He was hurt. I know. I put him there. How else was I going to get you? You hurt him? The thought, are you going to hurt me, comes into her mind, but she is too afraid to ask. It seems easier to ask about someone else. But how? How did you know we were there? This doesn't make any sense. None at all. I've been watching you, Isabel, waiting until you came to me. It's all meant to be. But the man in the street, you couldn't have known he would be there, that I would help him, that Liv would be sick. I'd like to say it was my scheme, my skills, my timing, but really it wasn't me at all. I mean, yes, I put all those plans together. I even managed to put a little of what you had yesterday in your friend's drink, remember? The stuff that made you vomit. But it wasn't luck or chance. I think Elise must have been watching over me, making everything work out so well. She must want you, Isabel. She knows you will look after her properly. She lies for a moment in her haze, trying to understand what he meant. Elise, I don't understand. You were going to call for an ambulance. That's when I had to step in. Your poor little face when you saw me. You smiled. She sees the hint of a smile behind the mask again. You thought I was going to help. They always think that. They? He turns away for a moment, and when he faces her again, he's holding a syringe. But that's when I injected you. And then you ended up here. She winces as the needle punctures her skin, but it doesn't really hurt. Don't worry now, Isabel. It will all be over soon enough. And with that, she closes her eyes. Chapter 25. Monday, 5th of February, 2035. 8:23 p.m. Kira looked over the footage of Ray Clark for the fourth time that afternoon. She still felt expectant, as if somehow the man on screen, his frayed blue-checked shirt, his shoulders slumped, and his red, craggy face, would give her some clue as to what had really happened on the night of Jennifer Bosanquet's abduction in 2020. He had been confused and disoriented at the time of the crime, under the tyranny of alcoholism. When he had come into the station to offer information about a news pop he had seen about a murder, Tom had been cynical, but Ray was the only witness, however muddled. Kira rewound the data and listened again. "Booze helps keep the cold out this time of year. I sleep in the garages to stay warm and keep away from the young ones, the druggies." Ray spat the last word as though the alcoholics were a better class of addict. Even on the screen, Kira could see his hooded eyelids, the slow movements of a man who had let something get the better of him. She knew his statement read that the row of empty garages he had been sleeping in was behind the shops off Ullswater Street. But then he changed his mind and said it was by an empty nightclub on the industrial estate behind the carpet factory. Both areas had been thoroughly searched back in the day, but no evidence had been found. Kira remembered the disappointment when they realised that Ray's story was a mangled mess of clashing memories, confused and indecipherable. There had been no train line by Ullswater Street, so he couldn't have heard a train. They couldn't find the garages Ray had described. The most confusing of all, Ray had said a woman had been taken, but the police knew that the victim was still at home on the day Ray said he had seen her. Then, when they wanted to clarify some of the information, Ray was nowhere to be found.
"I saw a man there. He wasn't a street dweller. He had a car, red one with a bash in the side," Ray said quietly.
"Do you know which make of car?" Tom jotted down a note as Ray shook his head.
"The noises woke me up from a deep sleep."
"Asleep or drunk," thought Kira. "What sort of noises?" Tom asked.
"Scraping, banging, screaming. But then it all went quiet. I've seen the working girls go there sometimes, but it wasn't like that. That's why I came. I don't normally talk to coppers."
What was he doing? Kira had rewound this clip so many times during the original case, she knew it by heart. Ray, agitated and distressed, Tom leaning across the table, the muscles in his shoulders taut as they strained against his shirt. He reminded her of a sniffer dog, onto something, as he said sometimes.
"I saw him drag her to the car. He came out of the garage opposite. Must have been about 11:30 as the train went past."
Ray scratched his head slowly, the unlit cigarette in his hand trembling.
"She had stopped screaming. He put her in the car boot. I don't know if she was drunk or if he had knocked her out, but she wasn't moving."
"Could you describe the man, Mr. Clark?" Tom's voice was steady, but he pulled at his earlobe. Kira knew him too well.
"Didn't see much. He was wearing dark clothes, a hood."
"Is there anything else you can tell us, Mr. Clark?" He took his time thinking about this.
"Later, when I came out of the garage, I found a necklace."
He pointed to the floor.
"It was silver."
"What did the necklace look like?"
"A little silver heart."
He held up his fingers as though he was still holding it.
"A whole heart?"
Ray shrugged. "Was there an inscription on it? Writing, anything?" Ray shook his head.
"I don't remember."
"Have you still got it?" asked Tom.
"No, I sold it for a few quid. Like I said, it was silver."
Tom put his pen down for a moment. "And you're sure this was February the 8th?
"Yes, Saturday.
Saturday," Ray repeated, but then shook his head. I'm not 100% sure what day it was. He considered this for a moment, then held up his index finger. No, I've made a mistake. It was Saturday the 1st. What makes you say that?
Tom's voice was unable to hide his exasperation.
Yes, because I had a newspaper. The story about the politician who smacked his girlfriend at the restaurant, so it must have been the 1st.
You don't remember exactly where this incident took place, Mr. Clark?
Not exactly.
But you think it was Saturday the 1st?
Yes, definitely, Saturday the 1st. That was the date on the newspaper.
Mr. Clark, our victim was at home safe and sound on that date.
Ray's eyes swiveled slowly in their sockets. He focused on Tom. But I saw her. I saw the woman. It was the 1st. The paper said, he insisted.
Mr. Clark, had you drunk much alcohol that night?
And then that was it.
Ray clammed up as though he didn't understand the questions anymore. Interview terminated. Frustrated with the lack of information on the data and still sore at Tom for sending her home for the day, Kira took a walk to buy some wine. On the main street, she was bombarded, as usual, by targeted sales pops. The advertising projector stood bright in the darkness of the street. As she walked past, they scanned her and immediately reacted to her.
Kira, when was the last time you had a checkup? Our private healthcare offers the very best in... Don't you think you deserve a reviving health spa, Kira? With vitamin drip, detox and total rest and relaxation, we'll make you feel like the best version of yourself.
News, she commanded, a little too loudly, and one or two people looked around. A news pop immediately appeared.
There has been another attack by People Against Poverty, who claim the government has targeted the long-term unemployed by deliberately cutting all forms of discounted health care unless they find a job. 5 private clinics were firebombed across the city.
Lomax, Kira said to the screen.
There are questions about the security of Rockwell Prison and their security firm, Tartarus Security. After notorious killer David Lomax escaped on the night of Kaylee Carmichael's death. To hear the whole story, scan your bank details.
Further along the road, Kira passed a building that had once been known as Our Lady of Mercy Roman Catholic Church, but was now a homeless shelter, as so many disused churches were. Outside, between the Gothic arches and stained glass windows, many of which had been smashed and replaced with hardboard, a large screen projected life-sized images of missing people in the hope that someone might recognise them. Name, age, last seen, what they might look like now. She thought back to what Marcus, Ray's son, had said 15 years ago about his father's last known whereabouts. She stepped into the porch and stood wondering if she should ask around, knowing the chances of Ray even being alive were slim. If he was, he could be in any one of the shelters around London. Would the street dwellers give information to a stranger? She doubted it. She looked up to a painted plaster statue of the suffering Christ that hung above the sanctuary, gazing down on the crowd of despondent men and women sleeping on roll mats or eating brown sludge scooped out from an enormous pot into small cardboard dishes. The smell turned her stomach. As she was leaving, a street dweller was coming into the porch and she caught a glimpse of his face. She could hardly breathe with shock. Her father peered out at her from under a dark woolly hat, a great weeping sore on his lower lip and chin. "Oh my God," she whispered. "Dad?" The man suddenly lunged at her and grabbed her arms with his claw-like, filthy hands. His grip was tight, painful. He locked eyes with her. "Kira, love, you've got to stop this."
"Dad?" she said, distraught.
"You're going to make yourself ill, Kira. You'll never catch him, love. Go home. Molly needs you now. Your mum needs you." He let go of her and shuffled into the church.
"Dad! Dad!"
screamed Kira. A few of the residents gawped at her. The man turned back to see what was going on, confusion on his face.
He looked nothing like her father. She moved into the street, unable to breathe easily, using her inhaler, wondering what the hell was going on. Her father had been dead for nearly 5 years. Was this a phantom? Or was it because she wanted him back so much that somehow her brain had confused her? What had she been thinking? The street dweller was nothing like her dad. Her brain was traumatized with the technology. She had done this to herself. Jimmy was right. This had to stop. But even then, she knew that she wasn't going to stop. Not now. 9:45 p.m. What's going on? Not wanting to be alone, Kira had driven to her mother's straight from the shelter. Her mother, dressed for bed, shut the front door behind them and winced as there was a crashing sound coming from upstairs. Molly's having a hard time adjusting. She shook her head, tears in her eyes. She's got to start acting her age. There was another thump coming from Molly's room as something hit a wall. She's young and upset, her mother began. No, Mum. This is ridiculous. She's nearly an adult. She needs to grow up and stop being a burden on you. She felt a surge of annoyance towards her niece. She's always been like that, Kira. Always full on, all or nothing. With your dad gone, she's been a lifesaver, really. What would I have done with myself? Moped around the house. She's good company, mostly. She's having a hard time. Don't be playing it down. If she's being a pain, then she needs telling. Kira was surprised at the aggression in her own voice. She always plays up at this time of year. She'll settle down when Emma's anniversary has passed, her mother said gently. She needs to grow up. Emma was pregnant with her at that age. A horrible phrase popped into Kira's head. Stupid little whore getting caught. She shook herself. Where had that come from? There was a flicker of pain on her mum's face. I can't believe she'll never get to know her own mother. I'll stay tonight. I'll go and have a word with her. As she moved to go upstairs, her mother caught her arm. Be kind, Kira. Please, just be kind. She hasn't exactly been kind to you, she replied, pulling away roughly. I'll put her straight. This isn't like you. Her mother appeared confused. What's wrong? But she ignored the question and stomped up to Molly's room. Molly, what the hell? She said as she opened the bedroom door. Part of her knew that a teenager who trashed her room was someone in despair, someone who needed help. But she felt a deep irritation bordering on anger. Get up! She shouted at her niece, who was lying on the bed amidst the chaos, clothes everywhere, the wardrobe doors open, pictures torn off the walls, possessions flung around, a long crack down her mirror. Molly half sat up, her long dark hair tangled over her still wet face. Kira bent down, grabbed her by the shoulders and roared, "You can't behave like this!" Molly winced. "You're upsetting your nan. We all lost your mum. We all feel it. Stop being selfish." Molly looked at her with surprise and then shouted, "You don't know what it feels like. I was there." She seemed almost relieved to have someone to take her tantrum out on. She raised her hands to hit out. "You don't remember any of it. You were only a kid," Kira yelled back at her, grabbing her by the wrists. Molly opened her mouth in shock, and then her expression morphed into a scowl. "I don't care what you say, it still hurts. I know it's in my head, but I don't remember." She tried to wrestle away from Kira. "Stop being so dramatic." "Get off me, you bitch," Molly burst out. Kira released one of her wrists and slapped her niece across the face, brief and hard. There was a moment of stillness, both of them shocked. Kira let go of her altogether and put her hand to her mouth. Molly's hands flew up to her cheeks, her eyes welling up with tears, turning from anger to distress. "Oh, God, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to," Kira began. What the hell had she just done? She had never lifted her hand against anyone, never mind her niece.
Get out of my room. Leave me alone.
Molly threw herself back on her bed, face down. As Kira left, she caught a glimpse of herself in the broken mirror, the crack dissecting her face, her heart also feeling fractured. She made her way to the spare room, in a daze, tears brimming in her eyes. What was happening to her? She lay on the bed, exhausted, feeling as though she was coming apart at the seams. How could she have treated Molly like that? She lay, unable to sleep, thoughts about the recent day's events tumbling through her mind, listening to her niece sobbing in the next room. Finally, after Molly had cried herself out and was asleep, and her mother had long gone to bed, sounds suddenly burst in Kira's ears, as though the screen downstairs had come on automatically at full volume. She sat up, disoriented and afraid, to the sound of two people arguing in her mother's kitchen, shouting, screaming and smashing crockery. It wasn't Molly and her mum arguing, it was too aggressive. They wouldn't behave like that, would they? She was certain they were asleep. But then she heard the roar of a man's voice.
How many times do I have to tell you, stupid bitch?
There was a crash as something flew against the kitchen wall, shattering Kira's nerves. She jumped off the bed, pulled on her sweater, and made her way tentatively to the bottom of the stairs. This must be a dream, surely. But when she got halfway down, she heard a woman's plaintive cries.
Please, please, I'm sorry, I'm so...
followed by a sickening, oh! Which rendered the woman silent. This wasn't a dream. It must be happening. This was too real. What the hell was going on?
You stupid little whore. I don't have to tell you again,
came the man's voice, the effort of his violence punctuating his speech. The door of the kitchen was ajar, and Kira saw someone move on the other side. In a panic, she slipped on the last stair, twisting her foot. She winced in pain, stifling a cry, and crawled up a few stairs, horrified, but desperate to know what was happening. Then came the woman's howls from the kitchen.
No, no, please, let go, Dave.
Dave?
Why do you make me do this?
He yelled, and then a horrible thudding sound. Kira lay sprawled on the stairs, not knowing whether to go up or down, petrified, but desperate to stop whatever it was that was happening. Should she go into the kitchen? Would everything disappear in the light, as it had done at her flat the other night? She pushed herself up straight, her foot aching, and took a deep breath. It's not real. It's not real, she told herself, moving towards the door, ready to shed light on her own imagination. But this was the most vivid phantom she had experienced. She went to reach for the handle, breathless. Terror stabbed at her heart as the door to the kitchen was flung open. There stood the large silhouette of a man who, even from this view, she recognised immediately. David Lomax. Her logical mind was telling her, this is a phantom. He is not here. He's in Rockwell. But she was utterly petrified. Her legs quivered as though they were going to give way beneath her. Her foot, throbbing with pain, she clambered back up the stairs, using her hands to claw her way up to the spare bedroom. She could hear the thudding of his feet as he made his way up behind her. He was gaining on her. Her heart and head pounded. Her mouth was dry. The woman in the kitchen was silent now. Was he going to silence her too? She flung herself into the bedroom and shut the door behind her, out of her mind with fear, desperate to find somewhere to hide. She ducked down onto the floor, ready to scramble underneath the bed, when she saw a sight that almost stopped her heart. Two children, a young boy and a very young girl, hid under her bed. Their huge, terrified eyes staring right at Kira. The boy had his arm wrapped around the little girl. They looked at each other, fear etched onto their little faces, and then turned back to Kira, put their fingers to their lips and whispered,
"Shh."
Chapter 26. Tuesday, 5th of February, 2035, 7:50 a.m. Kira sipped at the coffee in the reinforced paper cup that she held tightly as though it contained liquid gold. She had bought it from a proper barista bar after smelling the aroma pumped out by the 3D sales pot near the lab. It was the real thing, expensive and irresistible. She stood in the street nearby the lab and glanced at her comset. Jimmy would be there in another 10 minutes or so. He was usually on time for work. The main street was quieter at this time of day, but the ever-shining lights from the shops and sales pops lit the gloomy early morning, straining her eyes. Those children she had seen last night. What the hell was happening to her? The phantoms were getting worse. Was she going mad? Jimmy would be able to reassure her, wouldn't he? Where was Jimmy? She tried to distract herself by giving in to the ubiquitous screens, throwing out all sorts of images which vied for her attention. The well-being centre caught her eye.
Are you concerned about your health and fitness? You only have one body, Kira, and we can help you to reach optimum.
Our latest computer programme to reduce stress has been rated by the Health Ministry as one of the best available. Kira swiped it away, only for it to be replaced with a more irritating sales pop.
Having a partner can add so much to your life. We can match you based on your values, ideals, and...
Tom immediately came to mind. There had been a point 15 years ago when they should have made more of it, but that was in the past now. She lived with enough regret. She had to let it go. She dropped her coffee in shock as Lomax's face appeared in front of her, staring out from the hologram straight at Kira, the eyes following her wherever she went. A newsreader's face replaced him.
And in breaking news, a secret source from the Met has divulged that police are now looking for more than one suspect in the Mizpah murderers. This surprise revelation comes as information was leaked that David Lomax, convicted of the horrific attacks on 6 women 14 years ago, may not have acted alone. Reports that Lomax was not at the scene of the... Looking down at the pool of coffee around her feet, Kira groaned.
No doubt the press were going to start digging around every tiny detail of the case, and accusations of police incompetency would be flying. Tom would be furious. Where had the information come from? Was there a mole on the team? How would it affect her mother, or Molly, all the other families of the victims who would hear this and realise that they had been let down, that there might still be someone out there to fear, who might kill again? Isabel Marsden appeared next, a full-body hologram much shorter than Kira, her hair blonde and shoulder-length, her face pleading. She reached out her hands to Kira, her voice echoing, "Have you seen me?" She disappeared and reappeared, stretching out her hands again and again and repeating, "Have you seen me?" on a loop. Then Tom appeared in a face-to-camera interview. Kira halted and passers-by moved around her as she stood still to watch. "We are very concerned for the welfare of Isabel Patricia Marsden, 21, who has been missing since Friday night." Tom's voice was clear and deep, his gaze steady. "She was last seen at approximately 10:40 outside the Farmer's Arms pub on Marlborough Street. Isabel is a student nurse, and she was tending to an injured man outside the pub. We strongly urge that person to please come forward so that we can eliminate him from our inquiries. Isabel knows staff from the Royal University Hospital, and there is a possibility she may have gone there with the injured man or been picked up by a non-registered taxi. Her bank card has not been used, and there has been no activity on her social media accounts. If you have any information, even if you think it is trivial, please do not hesitate to call, text, or email on the number on the screen. It is essential that we find Isabel as soon as possible." Kira moved down the street, and the press conference news pop continued on another screen where Isabel's father, face white and strained, his voice trembling, begged for information.
"Isabel, I love you and..."
He choked.
"Isabel, I love you and I want you home. If you're having problems, we can face them together, and work through this. Please, if you are watching this, either get in touch and let me know you're okay, or be assured that we are doing everything we can to bring you home.
She looked up to see Jimmy sauntering along the street, moving in time to music only he could hear. When she dived in front of him, his face fell.
Jimmy, I need to talk to you.
Did he just roll his eyes?
Stop music, he commanded his comset.
I'm on my way to the lab.
I know.
She grabbed his arm. She could feel the muscle tense.
Please, Jim, I need to talk to you.
He studied her face. You look like shit. She released her grip.
Thanks. Please, come for a coffee with me.
She saw the reluctance in his face. Finally, he said, You're paying. Relief washed over her, but she couldn't manage a smile.
Sure.
They went into a nearby cafe, ordered coffee, synthetic this time, and sat observing each other.
Are you well?
He was guarded, but he was here, wasn't he?
Just tired.
You know what I mean. How are you after the transference? He said the last word quietly, even though there wasn't anyone sitting near to them, only a man in work overalls in the corner, engrossed in his food. The two little children under the bed had been on her mind all night. She tried to focus on Jimmy's face to distract herself from thinking of the terror in their eyes. Lomax had seemed to disappear as soon as she had closed the bedroom door, but the children, they had been different. She had lain on the floor of the bedroom for some time, staring at them as they soundlessly stared back at her. She had managed to get rid of the phantom eventually. She was on top of this, wasn't she? Why the hell was she seeing children? Whose children were they? The actual transference went well. I don't know if I'm getting better at it or if it depends on the person that I'm reading, but I feel like I'm seeing things clearer, getting to the memory faster.
That's good then, he said uncertainly.
I couldn't see anything in Lomax's memories that suggested he was in any way involved in the murders. Doesn't mean he didn't do it. I'm still not sure to what degree people can block their memories in a transference. I don't know if it's possible.
We could set up some kind of control test for that, he said, and then grimaced again.
Didn't he want to help? The only thing is, I saw some pretty horrible things in his head.
Jimmy folded his arms and knitted his brow. What sort of things?
Hardcore porn, violence against women.
Surely that means he can't control what he shows you in his memories. I mean, wouldn't he block those memories from you if it was possible?
He's an animal, Jim. I think he enjoyed letting me see those things. If there was a memory in his mind that he wanted to hide, he might have tried to cover them with shocking images deliberately to put me off.
Did you see anything else? Residual memories, I mean. Phantoms.
She hadn't intended to tell him, to tell anyone. Jimmy had warned her that it was going to be bad. How could it not have been, the sort of mind she had gone into? She hadn't planned on putting herself in Jimmy's I told you so firing line. But who else could she tell? Not Tom, not Carter, not her mum, not Molly. But Jimmy was her lab partner. These were legitimate concerns that she had about this technology. These things were going to have to be faced. The phantoms were scary, but she could control them.
Couldn't she?
What is it? He asked.
Nothing. It was only a side effect, you know? What we expected, really.
She couldn't face him.
Kira, I can tell that there's something else.
He leaned over to her, his dark blue eyes full of concern. She had been trying to muster all her mental strength, as difficult as that was after the depletion of going into Lomax's mind, and tell herself this was all imaginary. But the faces of those children. The images from the transference are getting stronger, but the phantoms are also getting stronger.
Go on.
He was clearly deeply concerned now. Last night, I think I saw Lomax.
Immediately, Kira saw his expression change, and she hated herself for being so weak, putting herself under scrutiny.
At yours?
I was staying at my mum's. Exhaustion swept over her, and she found herself crumbling, head in hands.
Jesus, said Jimmy.
I saw him, but this time, he knew I was there.
This time? Jimmy said, appalled. You mean you've seen him before?
It was as though he was aware of me, and I ran upstairs to get away from him.
Her face was burning.
I know he wasn't real, but it felt real, and I tried to hide. And under the bed...
Her mouth dried up. She sipped at her cup, her hands shaking. Go on, Jim said, his face deadly serious, his eyes wide.
She could hardly bring herself to speak the words. Under the bed, I saw two little children, hiding.
She held her breath, terrified of his reaction, of what it might mean.
Children? Asked Jimmy, incredulous. A boy and a girl. The boy was maybe 7 years old. The girl was 2 or 3.
Who were they?
I don't know.
She could see he was struggling to make sense out of what she was saying, was disturbed by her words.
When I shut the door, it was as though Lomax just disappeared.
The heavy footfall getting closer up the stairs had stopped abruptly.
But the children, they stayed there.
What happened then? Jimmy spoke quietly, but was that horror in his eyes? What did you do?
I said loudly, this is not real. And then they vanished. There was a bubble of stillness between them, the clashing of crockery and chatter from gathering breakfast customers not able to break through.
Does your mum know you're having...
No, Kira said quickly. She doesn't know I'm involved with the case again.
Unless the receptors haven't left your bloodstream. I mean, it's highly unlikely they would work without the kid.
Or without the subject being nearby, added Kira. I've thought of that. Maybe they are residuals, and I'm seeing Lomax's other memories somehow. Things that I'm not picking up on the headset. Things that happened at another time.
What if the receptors pick up much more information than we realised? More memories, but we can't read it all at the same time. Then your brain might show you those things at a different time. That might cause it.
He ran his hand through his dark curls.
It still doesn't explain.
He stood up.
We should scan you. We'll go to the lab before Carter gets in.
No, she said, making a swiping movement with her hand. I'm fine. It's only side effects. Or else the tech is stimulating my imagination.
This is only a psychological reaction to everything I've been through, she tried to persuade herself.
I'm not mad. I'm suffering from stress. That's all, isn't it?
But she knew there was more to it than that. Distress suddenly overwhelmed her.
I don't know what's happening to me.
Tears spilled from her eyes.
I heard him beating a woman in the kitchen. I could hear her screaming, and then he came out and followed me up the stairs.
Kira, this isn't right. This isn't right at all. I mean, to some degree, I would expect the psychosomatic asthma going into someone else's memory would leave you feeling close to that person, would bring an empathetic response, but this isn't good. When you saw the soldier, Brownrigg, that made some sense. You met him, you saw his experience, and then you dreamed about the soldiers he fought with. You were still seeing his memories from his perspective. What you experienced last night goes beyond reaction to stimulus. Do you even know if Lomax battered a woman?
I heard it at the police station. There were complaints against him for domestic violence.
Jimmy's shoulders relaxed a little, but his face was still strained. That might explain it. If you heard about it then, it might be the power of suggestion. His eyes travelled to the floor for a moment and then back to her. What I don't understand is why you are seeing Lomax. You should be able to see things that you have experienced within Lomax's memories from his point of view. I would expect that. but you shouldn't be able to see Lomax himself. We couldn't have predicted this. You should be seeing out of his eyes, from his perspective, not seeing him.
What if they are Lomax's kids, and I'm picking up a residual memory, one that my conscious brain wasn't aware of in the transference, but it's in here somehow?
She tapped the side of her head.
Does Lomax have kids? Jimmy asked.
She shook her head.
Not that I know of. Maybe I'm picking up on stuff in his subconscious. This could really take our tech up to the next level.
Even she knew now that she was clutching at straws, trying to find a silver lining in this mess.
Jesus, Kira!
His voice was louder now, with anxiety.
What do you think you are? Some kind of oracle?
We called the machine Cassandra to be ironic, not because we're psychic.
You should tell Carter, so he doesn't sell it to the MOD. Imagine what could happen to a soldier who performed a transference with a terrorist.
It's too late, Jimmy said, then put his hand to his mouth. I'm sorry. I didn't want to tell you when you were upset, but the deal's been done.
That's my kid, my tech. We built that.
A sudden rush of anger.
Has the machine gone already?
No, not yet. Why? Two elderly women came into the cafe and made a big deal of where they were sitting and taking their coats off. Kira immediately resented them. They made loud, cheerful conversation with the waitress, and she had to resist the strong impulse to tell them to shut up.
Jimmy, please listen. I need to do one more transference. Please help me to do it, just one more.
Jesus, you've only just finished telling me how this has been messing with your head.
I know you're asking me... Please, this will be the last time, I promise.
No, there's no way. He folded his arms.
Why was he being so stubborn?
It's my fucking tech,
Kira said loudly, and the women stopped their chatter and gawped at her. She scowled back.
There's one more witness, she told Jimmy more quietly. Ray Clark. He can't tell us what he saw because he can't remember. He was drinking and...
No chance, said Jimmy. You're my friend, Kira. I don't really understand what you've got yourself into, but I'm not going to let you destroy yourself.
It's going to destroy me if I don't find out the truth.
Kira yelled, banging her fist against the table, some of the coffee sloshing out of her mug onto the tabletop. The other customers gawped at her now.
What?
She said, scowling at them. Jimmy stood up.
I'm sorry. But enough's enough.
Kira watched him leave the cafe and thought, I don't need you anyway. Chapter 27. Tuesday, 6th of February, 2035, 9:32 a.m. There was less than 40 hours to go before the killer completed his pattern, and the mood in the hub was grim. It was compounded by a cloud of suspicion. Who had betrayed the team and blabbed to the press? Kira was the outsider, the obvious choice, and Harry and a few of the other officers had made their feelings clear. Alex, do you know if we can get in touch with Ray Clark somehow? Kira had approached Alex when she was on her own, not wanting the others to overhear. Alex regarded her quizzically. I think his son's contact details are in the system, although he might not want to talk to us. He made a complaint back at the time about the way his father was treated. Kira remembered, but it was worth a shot.
Why do you want to talk to him again? He told us everything he knew back then. I can't imagine his memory has got any better.
We've got to try every avenue, right? Kira knew that wouldn't convince her. Alex was smart, intuitive, trained up, and determined. She would see what Kira was trying to achieve. If anyone could understand the importance of her tech, it would be Alex. What if one day the police even bought the tech? She was exactly the sort of officer that would make the most of it. Should she tell Alex? They had a bond, didn't they? Alex called up the number on a nearby screen and raised her eyebrows as Kira typed it into her comm set.
Listen, don't tell Tom about this, Kira began.
Jesus, Kira!
Alex hissed, her blue eyes wide. Are you trying to get me into trouble with the boss? But then there was a hint of a conspiratorial smile. Kira smiled back. Ray Clark's son, Marcus, wore an expression of irritation, as though he had been interrupted in the middle of something very important. He appeared to be of a similar age to Kira, and might have been attractive if his face hadn't been twisted in fury. Kira and Alex had gone to one of the viewing rooms for some privacy when they called him, hoping Tom didn't find out. "Look, I told you lot 15 years ago to leave him alone." He peered down at Alex and Kira from the screen on the wall. "I knew this would come up when I saw that bloody news report about the Mitzpah killer," he exploded, no less belligerent than he had been back during the original case. "No, you can't speak to him. You upset the whole family last time. He went on a bender after all that. Just made everything worse. We don't want to talk to you. Dad's very upset again." "Your dad's still around?" Kira didn't manage to keep the surprise out of her voice. He must have been lying about not knowing Ray's whereabouts. Had he been trying to protect his father, it was understandable. Marcus's eyes narrowed. "Why are you bothering us? You weren't interested in what he had to say back then." Out of the corner of her eye, Kira saw Alex turn towards her. "I'm not a police officer. I'm a neuropsychologist, and I'm consulting on this case. I understand that your father was confused, but I think I might be able to help." Marcus studied her face for a moment. "I don't think my father needs your help, Miss... Dr. Sullivan. Marcus, please listen to me." Kira could hear the desperation in her own voice. "As a psychologist, I know that being unable to help can make a person feel frustrated, guilty even." She wished she could tell Marcus that she knew this from personal experience. Alex's eyes bored into her.